You're listening to Fundraising Radio, a podcast about fundraising for early stage startups. The major rule that we follow here is no bullshit on this podcast. No music to relax you, no advertisements of our sponsors. We only talk about fundraising here and nothing else. So let's jump into the episode. And today's guest speaker, we have Brett Goldstein, co-founder and CEO of Lounge House, a unique accelerator. And in this episode, we'll talk about accelerators, what a Lounge House exactly does, how is it different from other accelerators. And later on, we'll talk about whether or not you should go with a normal accelerator and how to choose one. So Brett, let's kick it off by you giving us some background on yourself and on Lounge House.
Hey, excited to be here. Background on myself. Wow. Maybe the TLDR is from the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, California. Went to school in Berkeley, worked in consulting after I graduated. Spent some time on the Google M&A team where I was, you know, researching startups and helping the executives figure out what to do in terms of investment and purchasing startups. And then I switched over to product management, and then I had the opportunity to kind of dig into the startup world and become a PM at a startup before the pandemic hit, and then we started Lounge House. So So Lounge House, TLDR, is we're a community for founders, creators, and other ambitious folks. The very simple explanation of what we do is we have a mansion in Beverly Hills. Paris Hilton used to live there. And we have this beautiful townhouse in New York City, in Chelsea, that this Goldman Sachs exec used to live in there. So obviously they're very beautiful places. And we run these kind of 1 month long, residency programs, as we call them, in each of these locations. We're also going to be starting on the 28th of November. We're going to be running our first metaverse location residency program. And all of these have been for founders so far. And basically the idea is, number one, let's connect as founders. Let's bond. Let's go deep as people. Number two, it's let's help each other, get to the next level in whatever we're trying to accomplish with our startups. So it's been pretty great so far. We've been in business for a little over a year. We started in Tulum. We had two houses in Tulum that went pretty well. And we've had founders come through, go through our program, raise money from, you know, all the top funds that you would imagine, Sequoia, Andreessen, YC, all of those. And super excited to be here and super excited for what's next.
100%. And next, before we move on to the discussion of Lounge House and accelerators, one question about your work at Google M&A division. Can you tell us just briefly a little bit more? You mentioned that, you know, you were reporting to the executives at Google about, you know, what was going on in the startup field and what makes sense to purchase for them. Can you tell us a little more about that, and specifically what kind of startups were catching your eye? I know a lot of founders are trying to figure out, you know, how can I get noticed by someone at Google, Facebook, Amazon, and other, you know, top tier companies in order to be acquired. How were you noticing those companies? Were there any particular resources that you were actively scouting, or was it just, you know, someone mentioned this startup multiple times and you're like, all right, you know what? It actually looks like a good startup.
Yeah. So, I mean, the process that I had was probably similar to what a lot of VCs scouting process looks like, which is meeting tons of people in venture and in startups, asking them what they're excited about, all that stuff. Every month we would have a different topic that we'd research. So 1 month I was researching kind of the future of the camera. Obviously that included augmented reality, and other kind of like camera related content creation applications. So I would just spend a lot of time downloading apps, looking around, talking to friends. You know, I was in my early 20s. So I was, you know, I was super plugged in, compared to kind of the Google execs who were in their, you know, late 40s. Mm-hmm. you know, my job was just to, relay that, you know, that information. So, you know, one example project I work on, that camera project, is, you know, I musically, I like was super excited about it and interested in, and all these other ones. And I basically kind of like summarized what was happening in that space, like why I thought Musical.ly was interesting, why I thought Snapchat was interesting. And, you know, it was up to the executives to do with it as they like, as is true of basically every strategy organization. We don't have purchase power ourselves.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say like best advice for founders who want to get acquired is don't talk to corp dev. Don't talk to people like me. Talk to the product teams. talk to the people you'd be working with, because these are the ones, you know, the product people and the executives at any company are the ones with purchase decision. They're the ones who can like tell the corp dev team to go and make an acquisition. It doesn't happen the other way around. So if you have the blessings of those teams, then you're in good shape. If not, you should go and talk to those teams.
So that is actually great advice. I've interviewed multiple founders who were acquired, and yes, it always starts with collaboration. It starts with working with a product team being excited about their product, and then they're like, all right, you know what, we're acquiring you. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah,
definitely great advice here. So now that we covered that, let's talk about LoungeHouse. And first things first, let's go a little bit more into the details of how it works. So can you describe the program a little bit more? So let's say I'm a founder, I get into the program, I move to the location, what happens for the month?
Yeah, so it's pretty similar to a normal accelerator. We actually compare it to this thing called Harvard Reading Period. So Harvard Reading Period is the period between finals and classes, where they don't have any classes, they don't have anything to do. All the clubs shut down. And basically the only thing students are supposed to do is work and study for their finals. Naturally, there was a guy named Mark and a guy named Bill who went to Harvard, and they were not studying. They decided to build companies instead. And those companies were Facebook and Microsoft. So basically, and there's a ton of research on this idea of like free time creates innovation, creates intimate connections. It's actually the secret sauce to like basically, you know, any sort of amazing origin story, you know, from the origin stories of $1 billion, $1 trillion companies, as well as, you know, deep relationships and friendships. It's this unstructured time that really is the magical thing. So, most of the days, are pretty unstructured. People have work that they need to do on their companies, and we don't want to get in the way. So just like any accelerator, we allow people to work on their companies all day, every day. But about four nights a week, we have programming. And the programming is focused on two things. One is building deep connections with, you know, within the cohort, from one person to another. And number two is helping accelerate their startup's trajectory. And so obviously we have a pretty wide range of people in different phases of their startup journey, but it's mostly early stage. So most people are really concerned about fundraising, ideation, and growth, like getting their first customers. And so we focus a lot on the fundraising and the getting your first customer side of things. But again, backing up, Monday nights we have this thing called Founder Circle, which is a kind of intimate bonding night. It's not like a kumbaya circle. It's not cheesy or cringe. It's authentic and fun, and it's fine. But, you know, we're really allergic to doing anything that is like uncomfortable cringe. We also have these high profile speakers that come in every week. So typically these are open events, but we get so many applications to come to the event that we have to basically turn away a little over half of the people who apply. But, you know, we've had speakers like Justin Kahn and Andrew Chen and Fred Ursum and, you know, a handful of other even more amazing ones in the pipeline coming up. And these talks are usually just fireside chats, very casual, like literally in our living room. To talk about whatever, you know, that person is an expert in. And it's usually relevant to whatever the startups that are working on. We also have kind of cohort office hours where somebody from the LoungeHouse team or our kind of network will come and talk about something really relevant and important for the startup. So I give a talk every cohort on Twitter for founders, because mm-hmm. Twitter is basically the most important tool in a founder's tool belt. And it's, despite all of the excitement about it, it's still pretty underrated and under discussed. So you still have some people who either neglected their Twitter account or just starting their Twitter accounts every cohort. What we also do this thing called a micro conference, which is basically where people in the cohort give like 10-minute lightning talks on whatever they are, you know, an expert in, but would be valuable for the other, for the rest of the community. And yeah, those are the main ones. We do have a lot of, we do have dinners every night. We do have kind of more fun events. So we have, last night we had a content day where we invited over a bunch of like huge TikTok and Instagram influencers and played the Squid Games. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah.
So we played Squid Games with them. It was really funny because it was like half of the competitors were startup founders, half of them were influencers. And you know, the objective of those types of content days and things like that are to build connections between founders and creators, because one of the biggest things, one of our biggest beliefs is that creators are a really, really important partner in terms of, one, understanding your audience. Like, these people understand audiences and humans better than anybody else. And number two is getting the distribution you need to get in front of your customers.
Mm-hmm. Right. Let's talk about distribution a little bit more, and specifically Twitter. Twitter is my weak point. I have started multiple times. I have tried to be consistent with it, and I failed. Just doesn't work for me. So can you tell us a little more about Twitter specifically for fundraising? How does it work? What is your major advice in that field? And just, you know, to share whatever you want to share on this subject.
Yeah. So fundraising is basically a game of trust, right? So when a venture capitalist is evaluating you to invest in your company, they're evaluating the risk. And the easiest way to mitigate risk is to create trust between you and the venture capitalist. Because if you're telling somebody, hey, my company is going to be worth $1 billion in 2 years, whether or not they believe you is a function of trust. And one of the most important things is that we trust our friends and family more than anybody else in the world, right? That's why, like, the mafias, you know, in New York and Italy and stuff, they're like literally families. Like, they're crime families. That's why you call each other brother or sister or whatever like that. You know, it's to create trust, right? If you go into the souks and in the bazaars, you know, in different countries, they'll call you brother.
Yeah.
Because family is trust. And so the idea is that one of the easiest ways to build trust is familiarity. There's like a psychological studies that showed that people who are exposed to something more often, somebody else more often, trust it more, right? So the idea is that repeated exposure shows us trust. The other thing to think about is, like, people who are in the same friend circles as you, you trust them more, right? So the idea is, like, Twitter is just a group of people hanging out. Think about it like that. Twitter is a group of people hanging out. And anytime you get on Twitter, you reply to some tweets, you tweet yourself, you're basically showing up to that hangout. And the really important thing is that a lot of those people are venture capitalists. They're founders, they're designers, engineers. They are the people that you want to hang out with, because they are going to fund your company one day. They're going to work at your company one day. And so whatever you're doing, doesn't matter what you're saying or doing, as long as you're not being an idiot or mean, as long as you show up and are present for an extended period of time, you'll have familiarity. People know who you are, and people will trust you. So that's one of the simplest ways to understand what, you know, why Twitter is so valuable. The other thing is, Twitter is also your kind of like top of funnel as a media company. So the reality is, we're all kind of media companies. We all have a product we're selling. As a founder, you're selling equity to investors, right? You're selling the vision, the story of your company. And so, you know, you have to go to where your customers are in order to market to them, to sell to them. Mm-hmm. And your customers, the venture capitalists, are hanging out on Twitter. So it's just a really, really important place to be. It's the reason that Launch House has been successful, both from, you know, attracting investors, but as well as attracting, you know, founders and employees and stuff.
Mm-hmm. All right. I mean, Twitter is definitely a very good thing to raise money, and recently Clubhouse added to that. So recently kind of died out, but anyways, it was definitely somewhere up there. So yeah, those places you can legitimately find good money for your round, especially early rounds. So this is very, very good advice, and even backed by solid evidence, aka familiarity researches. That is true, that was proven, and yeah, great advice, love it. So let's talk about normal accelerators now. There are hundreds and hundreds of them. I have interviewed dozens of founders of different accelerators. Quite a few of them are absolutely great. I have seen founders of accelerators that are not as great as most of them are. So can you talk a little more about those differences between actually good accelerators that do provide value versus those that are not as, you know, as good as the others? The phrasing there is terrible. I apologize for that. But yeah. You understand the point.
Yeah. So basically, the way to think about fundraising and venture capital is that it's a trade. The most basic component of the trade is you're trading money for equity in your company. So way back in the day when like there were basically not that many venture capitalists or anything or companies or even knowledge on how to build companies, that was it. That was the entire trade. You would trade capital or you trade equity for capital, right? And so now that there's so much more, you know, energy in the ecosystem, there's so many more startups, there's so many more investors, accelerators emerged basically to give an extra value add, because guess what? Guess what's better than giving a company money? Ensuring their success. So a lot of these accelerators, basically their job is to ensure that their bets do well. And so they have these programs obviously that help that. And the main ways that the main focus areas obviously are fundraising and getting customers. Like, so YC is, you know, the poster child here, which is like they have their demo day. There's always the YC markup. And they also help a lot with getting your first customers if you're a B2B SaaS company. And the reason for that is they have this massive community of founders that is very, very dedicated to the YC brand. And so founders obviously are the primary customers for B2B SaaS products. So it makes sense that YC would be B2B SaaS oriented, because, you know, those are the customers that they have access to right away. So what's important about this is that times have changed. Founders have tons and tons and tons of options. The internet and social media have matured, where especially if you're, you know, a founder that's already in the Bay Area or plugged into the, you know, the startup scene or on Twitter, to emphasize that point again, you don't necessarily need to, you don't need a lot of the services that the accelerators are offering. Namely, mm-hmm. You don't need the fundraising support, because guess what? There's tons of investors out there out now that can, that will give you the valuation you need. And number two is acquiring customers is easier than it used to be. So really what's happening is, great founders know this, and great founders are opting out of going to these accelerators. There's kind of a metaphor for what's happening in education as well, where like really, really smart, you know, driven people, as long as they're not going into medicine or law, they're dropping out of college, right? And it doesn't mean that everybody that goes to college is dumb. It means that many of the smartest people are dropping out of college. So as an accelerator, you know, strategically, obviously you want to get those Coinbases and Stripes as much as possible. But the reality is that's going to become less and less true, because great founders have options. So what I think is happening in the accelerator world is this kind of emergence of non-accelerators, mm-hmm. where programs and companies and organizations that deliver value and create genuine connections with founders first, before asking for equity, before doing anything like that. So that's kind of what we're focused on at Launch House right now, which is, you know, we know that the greatest founders in the world have options. So let's just create a great experience for them, And then, you know, eventually, if they let us invest, we'll do that.
Perfect. I love that response. And yeah, 100% agree with you here. A lot of accelerators are extraordinarily, extraordinarily old school. I have seen some people even giving advice that, you know, you should actually print out your pitch decks. And yeah, definitely on the same page with you here. A lot of the values that they provide are stuck in 2010, where, you know, it was not as easy to get in touch with investors, with your customers, and you actually needed a lot of introductions from well-connected investors. Intros are still good, but not as valuable as they used to be. So Brett, we're definitely on the same page here again. So now that we have that all covered, moving on to the last two questions, and one of them is just a technical one. I forgot to ask it, and I'm curious for founders who are listening to this right now, and they're like, you know what, LoungeHouse does sound found. How do I get in? How much is it?
Yeah, so LoungeHouse is a lot of fun. That definitely emphasized that point. So we have an application process, just like any normal accelerator. A lot of the questions are probably pretty similar. We ask people to post a fun video. We've had people even create some cool, fun TikTok videos as well. But yeah, so we have residencies almost every single month of the year, in New York, LA, and online. This is actually a sneak peek, just special for you guys here. We are probably going to be launching a fundraising focused digital program in the winter. So that would mean it would be a 4-week all online program. It'd be paid. There's no equity involved. It would be paid, and we would be bringing in experts in all the aspects of fundraising, which is everything from, like, you know, pitch deck design, AKA if you're early stage, don't make a pitch deck, make a Notion document. Number two, like public speaking, storytelling, all of those things. So you'd get kind of this tapas tasting of everything you probably need to know in terms of how to pitch your company, how to have a successful fundraise. So that'll be in the winter. But basically, you apply if you are a smart, driven, dedicated, you know, person. Doesn't matter if you've had success already, as long as you're on some awesome trajectory, and or your company is, like, really amazing and we're really excited about it, we'll admit you. And then the way it works is that you pay a program fee as well as a membership fee. And obviously, once you're a member, you don't need to pay the membership fee again. You have a discount on the program fee. But the program, you know, those fees change depending on what type of program you're doing. So obviously, online is the cheapest. You know, IRL is on the other end of the spectrum. And really importantly, we offer grants for underrepresented founders. So that will all those prices and everything will come out in the interview application process.
Nice. Is there a way to take a sneak peek on it right now? Can you give us a price range right now?
I would say that we're cheaper than any university. We are probably, and we're cheaper than any accelerator. And we're on par with a lot of the other kind of social clubs that you imagine.
Cheaper than the university. That is an extremely broad price range. All right, give me nothing, but that is okay. Let's move on then to the very last question, the call to action. So Brett, what do you want the listener to do as soon as this episode is over?
I'll actually break this down into two different areas. Actually, no, very simply, apply to LoungeHouse. LoungeHouse.co is our website. You can apply. We have upcoming programs right now, but we also are going to be announcing soon our winter programs. But honestly, just hit the apply button and we'll get you in the system and then get you rolling on, you know, into the community and everything. Number two is get on Twitter. If you're not already on Twitter, get on it. Follow LoungeHouse, Launch_house. Follow me, that guy BG. Start tweeting, have some fun and raise that round.
Perfect. That is a good call to action indeed. I will not follow your advice about code on Twitter. I gave up on myself there, but that is definitely worth giving a shot to people who don't have any other exposure. I have my excuse. I have the podcast. So I just say to myself, you know, don't worry about it. You have the podcast. You're fine. People, you do make appearances. So it's okay. For people who do not have podcasts, definitely check out the Twitter option. There are a lot of uses to that tool. And there are a lot of alternatives to that. If Twitter is not your thing, there are hundreds of other places where you can go, where you can get exposure to investors, and where you can close your rounds in a very relaxed way. So do that, follow that call to action. And my call to action is going to be simple as usually. Go to the description of this episode. I'm going to include everything that Brett mentioned, which is Clubhouse. Lounge House, that's what I meant. There's going to be Lounge House, there's going to be Brett's Twitter, and also there's going to be a link to fundraising video course on fundraising. We are actually building a fundraising course as well on one particular part of it, which is reaching out to investors. So if you want to figure out how to do that, definitely check out the description of this episode. And as usually, have a good day.